Hello, I'm Matthew. I'm the lead pastor here at Cedar Ridge. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We're in a series called Psalms, a Soundtrack for Our Lives. And today we'll look at Psalm 65. We just heard that read to us. It's a beautiful psalm. One of the things we've been saying about the psalms in general is how varied they are. They express all kinds of different emotions. They show all kinds of different experiences of God, different opinions about that. And in fact, this particular psalm comes at the end of a series of psalms that seem to be based on the different times in the life of King David, the biblical character. And they're often quite difficult times. They can be sometimes dark, almost traumatic psalms. This psalm is very different. It expresses a very different emotion. It's very celebratory, very positive. And it comes almost as a relief after that sequence. And the same is true for the following three psalms. There's kind of four psalms here that are in a group together. The psalm is divided into three parts. It's the beginning section is all about the temple. It's kind of the religious experience, if you like. The second section is all about nature and God being present in everything. And then the third section is about God's presence in the harvest. It's about agricultural provision, if you like. We'll kind of take that same approach, but we'll have a slightly different lens. Well, in the first section, we're going to think about experiencing God through intentionality. In other words, our intentional spiritual practice. That's one way of us accessing divine presence, if you like, or experiencing divine presence. Secondly, in the second section, we'll look at increasing our awareness of God in everyday life, God being present in everything, all the time, everywhere. And then thirdly, we'll look at experiencing God through the practice of gratefulness, and perhaps developing a deeper understanding of our connection to God in all things and to one another in all things. So let's jump into the psalm. It begins this way. Praise awaits you, O God, in Zion. To you our vows will be fulfilled. You who answer prayer, to you all people will come. That term, all people will come, that's a refrain throughout this psalm. It's very inclusive. It's about all people, not just any one individual or one nation. And that's a little different to some of the psalms we've looked at, because they've often talked about enemies and sort of bemoaned enemies, sometimes for very good reasons, and even called down violence on enemies. There's none of that in this psalm. It's all about inclusivity. It's all about everyone. And there's a kind of longing for everyone to come and experience God, to experience the reality of God. Two key words in that first section there I want to home in on. First one, it says, praise awaits you, O God. That term or word awaits, literally in the Hebrew, it means silence. In other words, when we intentionally seek God's presence, when we approach God, if you like, when we invoke God, we don't come with a lot of words. We don't come with requests. We don't come with demands. We come in hushed awe. We come in silence. We wait. We're more interested in being heard than in necessarily getting specific answers. And that's that continues in the next section, because it says, you who answer prayer. And the word there, answer, literally in the Hebrew, it means hear. It doesn't mean answer in the way that we might think it does. So the sense here is of communion with God, of being heard, and of listening, and of surrendering, if you like, and being in a posture of hushed awe as we come into the presence of God. It's not about manipulation. It's not about trying to get something out of God. The song goes on to talk about provision, as we'll look at in a moment, but this is not about trying to twist God's arm or perform some kind of religious act that's going to get God's favor. This is about relationship. It's about communion with God. Psalm goes on to say, when we were overwhelmed by our sins, you forgave our transgressions. Again, this is about honesty and openness, honesty about our wrongdoings. I think if we were all to stop right now and just reflect back over the last 24 hours, there'd be all kinds of things that we would say, yeah, we didn't do well there. We had a bad attitude. We treated somebody badly. Maybe we said something bad. That's true for all of us. It's very easy just to let those slide and lose consciousness of them, lose awareness of them, and just develop more and more bad habits. Here we have the psalmist being very aware and very remorseful about that wrongdoing and being honest and open about it. But honesty and openness isn't the only thing. This links back to the first verse where it says, To you, our vows will be fulfilled. There's this sense of within remorse, there has to be some kind of action. I think about that in terms of vulnerability and integrity. It's very vulnerable to be honest about our wrongdoing. But if we don't have integrity to actually then say, okay, I know I'm in the wrong, I need to do something about it, the honesty doesn't and vulnerability doesn't really count for that much. I think this is really important for us right now in this time when we're in this window of heightened awareness of racial injustice in our culture. I know for me, I've been feeling very remorseful as a white person, feeling guilty, feeling very repentant. And I felt that collectively, for how I'm part of a system or a collectively part of a way in which we've allowed white supremacy to reign supreme. And how have we done that? How have we done that? That's just, how could we not be repentant about that? I've also felt it individually, because there's times when I've been silent, I've not acted. I think I've been out of sight, out of mind is an easy option, I think, for a white person. Right now, it's in our mind, it's in our sight, and we can't ignore it. But there's a big question here, and I think it has to do with renewing our vows. It has to do with integrity. We may be repentant, but what are we going to do about that? That's a huge challenge for me. It's a huge challenge for many of us. And I want to encourage you that one way of us fulfilling our vows, as the psalmist is calling us to, would be to come to our the Zoom encounter group that the racial justice team are organizing tomorrow evening. That's at 8 p.m. on Monday. I'm not saying that's the be all and end all, but that's one way for every single one of us to respond, to say, right, we're not going to just let this pass by. We're not going to stay in a place of remorse. We're going to fulfill our vows to do something about this. That whole group is all about recognizing and understanding our place in racial injustice, and also being responsible for doing something about it. So join us tomorrow at 8 p.m. The psalm goes on to say, blessed are those you choose and bring near to live in your courts. We are filled with the good things of your house and of your holy temple. Really positive language. But there's a kind of thing in there about you, blessed are those you choose. That can almost feel selective, like there are some who are chosen, there are some who are not. I don't think that's what it means. I think if we take the spirit of the psalm, which has just said, to you all people will come, I think the inference is here, God chooses all people. The point of choosing is its reciprocity. It's not just about us coming to God. It's not just about us coming to the divine presence. It's about the divine presence finding us and being with us and perhaps longing for connection with us. So there's something very intimate about this. We are completely accepted in the divine presence. And part of what we need to do is accept the divine presence. We need to accept God and to kind of surrender to the presence of God and experience that intimacy, experience that communion. Now, that's all about our spiritual practice. That's all about being intentional in those ways. The psalm goes on into the section that's more to do with God being present in all of nature. It begins, you answer us with awesome and righteous deeds, God our Saviour. So this is the presence of God in the whole, in all of the world, in all our experience, in all our existence. And that presence is righteous. It's righteousness. That word zedek in the Hebrew, righteous, is also translated justice. We've talked about this many times before. Like righteousness and justice are almost synonymous. They go hand in hand. So in other words, God's presence in our existence, God's presence in our world is manifest as justice. As we connect and tune into and are more aware of God's the work of God, the righteous acts of God, as the psalmist would say here, the just acts of God, of the way in which God's presence is always working towards justice. As we tune in with that, are more aware of it, as we cooperate with that, we have a deeper experience of God. Now, it goes on to say, the hope of all the ends of the earth and the farthest seas. Very inclusive language again. And we have here a poetic form called a merism. That a merism is basically a way of expressing inclusivity, extreme inclusivity. So the Bible often uses terms like this, from the north to the south, or from the east to the west, or from the mountains to the valleys, extremes that are bookends within which everything else is contained. And there's many merisms in the prophets, for instance, and many in the Psalms. There's two more merisms, so three in total, just in this section. The ends of the earth and the furthest seas, so that's sort of land and sea, So everything in between. I mean, I think the implication here is that this justice, this just action of God in the world, this experience of God, is for everyone. It's not just about justice for me. It's about justice everywhere, all the time. You who formed the mountains by your power, having armed yourself with strength, who stilled the roaring of the seas and the roaring of their waves and the turmoil of the nations. There's a merism there. This is about the land, the mountains, the stable mountains, and the chaotic or unstable seas, especially viewed chaotically and almost sinisterly in Hebrew culture. So we have circumstances, if you like, that feel like mountains to us. They feel secure and safe, and we feel okay. But we have other circumstances we're in where we feel they're chaotic and we feel unstable and unsafe. And God is present in all of that existence. The whole earth is filled with awe at your wonders. When morning dawns, when evening fades, you call forth songs of joy. We have the morning, the dawn, and the evening. So it's God present in all of time. So I think you're getting the picture here. The psalmist is using merisms, using poetic forms to say God is present in everything. And that presence is righteousness and justice. So it's justice that is accepting of us. We all want justice, right? We all want righteousness, but it's not individual, it's collective. It's about justice for everyone. It's for the farthest lands and the most distant seas. This is about cooperating with God, experiencing God by being aware of what the work of God is, the action of God is in our existence, in our world. Let's move on to the third section, which has a similar theme in some respects, because it has a lot of nature language. It begins, you care for the land and water it, you enrich it abundantly. This I think summarizes the theme in this last section of everything being sustained in God, like God holding everything together. All of nature, the land, the seas, the wind, the rain, the animals, the plants, and all human beings, that we're all held together, and we are dependent on one another and interdependent. And I think that's really important, because that sense of dependency in some sense detracts from our own individuality and our own sense of independence, which I think, if we're honest, we all find hard. We shrink back from that. But what it does is it increases our sense of an experience of God, or it deepens our experience of God, because we realize we're part of something so much bigger. And that is really beautiful. Think about it this way. If you are, take the original context here, because we're talking about harvest, I think, in the original context of this language. Let's go on and look at some of the language. The streams of God are filled with water to provide the people with grain. For so you have in ordained it. You drench its furrows and level its ridges. You soften it with showers and bless its crops. You crown the year with your bounty, and your carts overflow with abundance. This is about a good harvest. This is about success, if you like. I mean, it's abundant language, very graphic, hyperbolic language. And if you think about a farmer back in that time, you would be celebrating at this point. And you might think, actually, that you've been pretty successful. But you'd also have to remember the fact that no matter how good you are, you might be the greatest farmer on the planet. You might have the deepest understanding of agriculture of anyone. But you are still dependent on so many things that you have nothing to do with or are beyond your control. The wind, the rain, the sun, the earth, infections of crops and animals and things like that. And so there's a recognition here, I think, of our dependence on something so much bigger than us, on the divine presence that holds everything together. And that's, I think, really important for us, because we're very cushioned from that reality. I think it's very easy for us to think that all the things that are provided for us, all the things we have, are there. We have them because we've earned them. We deserve them. We have a right to them. And some of that is because we're cushioned from the fact that we are connected and interconnected in so many very real ways. For instance, the food we eat on our plate, we might feel we earned it because we paid money for it, because we have jobs. But the reality is all kinds of people pick the crops, clean the crops, packaged them, transported them, prepared them, and sold them to us. We're dependent on many things there. perhaps more than ever right now, we're a little more tuned into that, because when we go to the store in the time of pandemic, we're a little nervous and we're a little more aware perhaps of the difficulty of getting food on your plate and the struggle to get food on your plate. We're also probably more tuned into the fact that there are people working in our grocery stores who normally get overlooked, aren't given a second look. But right now they're being called frontline workers. They're being called heroes because they are putting themselves at risk in order to provide us with food. So I think we can see in that how that makes us more aware of our interconnectedness, our dependency on so many other people. And that can lead us to increase gratefulness, right? To see everything we have, even when it's not as obvious to us as during a time of pandemic, but look at everything we have as not necessarily having been earned or deserved or a right, but a gift. It's a gift of provision. And we experience God by understanding that God is holding everything together, that we are held together along with the rest of creation, along with every single person on this planet. We belong to one another. We belong to God. And I think that's really important for us because there's an issue here of justice. In our gratefulness, that shouldn't lead us to just being sort of sitting back and thinking, oh, great, you know, I'm so happy and I'm so grateful, my life's fantastic. It should tune us into our interdependence and the fact that some people are going without, or some people are subject to systems that benefit us and don't benefit them. And we need, in our gratefulness, to act, to do something about that. We need to cooperate with the loving, righteous acts of justice that are the manifest presence of God in the world to bring about more fairness, to bring about the possibility for more people to be grateful, if you like. That's what gratefulness is, I think. I don't think it's a collective thing. It's not an individualistic thing. We see a little bit of that, I think, in the next section, which closes out the psalm. The grasslands of the wilderness overflow. The hills are clothed with gladness. The meadows are covered with flocks, and the valleys are mantled with grain. They shout for joy and sing. We have there, again, more sort of celebration of the harvest or of agriculture. You've got flocks of sheep, and you've got grain in the valleys. But there's also a celebration of things that aren't so human-centric. There's a celebration of the grasslands of the wilderness. It says the hills are clothed with gladness. You get the sense there of it's the wild places that have a natural beauty to them. The mountaintops or the hilltops have the gladness, I imagine, is spring flowers or alpine flowers. And so this isn't just about what benefits humans. This is the fact that we're part of something much bigger than ourselves. We're part of an ecological system on this planet that's way bigger than us. And rather than us just seeking to benefit from it, seeking to subdue it, we can actually experience God by seeing ourselves as part of it, that we belong to this earth, that we are connected to everything, the birds, the animals, the insects, the trees, the plants, and that the air we breathe is itself a gift. As we tune into that more, as we practice gratefulness in that sense, I think we can have a much deeper experience of God. That seems to me what the psalmist is talking about. Now, we'll apply each of these issues we've looked at, intentionality, awareness, and gratefulness, in a moment to our own lives and how we can actually perhaps begin to change some ways we see life through those practices. But we'll do that in a moment. First of all, I want to bring in Jen here. Throughout this series, we've been interviewing different people from our community about the various ways in which they experience God and how they kind of see the particular psalm we're looking at. So I'm going to bring in Jen now, and she's going to share with us a little bit. So let's welcome Jen. Hi, Jen. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. How are you doing?
Hi, you're welcome. I'm happy to be here, and I'm doing well this morning.
That's great. Well, let's just jump right in. We've just been looking at Psalm 65. You're going to share a little bit about your experience with God, your spirituality. Tell us how you relate to that psalm. How does it impact you?
Yeah, so what I love about that psalm is it really resonates with me now and having this more holistic view of God, and that God is all around us. And that's definitely not always the way I had experienced God or viewed God. So to contrast, as a child, I thought of God much more as this white male, almost authoritative figure, that this was a person whom I was trying to please. So just trying to be good. And this God knows best, you should just obey him, don't really ask questions. And this was sort of reinforced by when I was a kid, sometimes parents or relatives would say, you know, if I did something bad, well, that's a sin against God. Or on the flip side, if something bad happened to me, well, God must be punishing you for something that you did. So in some ways, it felt like God was this third parent who was more of a bean counter and either giving me gold stars or black stars, depending on my behavior at any given point. So I think with that view of God, as a child in particular, you know, I would feel guilty or maybe judged and not fully accepted by God.
Yeah.
So I much more appreciate as an adult and as the psalm resonates with me, thinking about God as this love or being that's everywhere and all around us. And for me personally, you know, while I do feel God is all around, I think that I get the biggest sense of connection when I'm sort of open and willing to receive that love. So yeah. I experience it a lot in interactions with nature, being outside. And some of my most favorite vacations or time during the weekend is just being outdoors and exploring new places and just taking time to pause and reflect at,
yeah,
you know, just how all these living things interact with each other in harmony. I feel like that can be a very spiritual experience.
Yeah.
And I know the psalm talks a little bit about nature too and yeah, the ways that we see God there.
Yeah, there's a lot of nature in there, isn't there, really?
Absolutely. and then the second piece too that I really experience God is just through interactions with others. So I feel I can contribute to that when I'm showing love or kindness or grace to other people. I feel like I'm giving back to that love that's around. And then on the other hand, I've had, you know, experiences where I have a really strong emotional response either to a particular event or a particular interaction with other people. And in hindsight, I feel those are ways that God might be using others to communicate with me.
Well, so tell us a little bit more about that. I mean, do you have any examples, stories about how you've experienced God that way?
I do. And I've had a handful of stories that I think about from time to time over the years. But there's one that always comes to the forefront. And this was an experience about 3 years ago. So it was the summer of 2017. And I was helping to plan a surprise wedding anniversary party for my mom and my stepdad. So they were about to celebrate their 10th wedding anniversary. And of course, in coordinating the party, I was making phone calls, sending emails, sending out invitations. And one of the calls I made was to one of my stepdad's adult daughters, Terry. And Terry and I didn't have a particularly close relationship, mainly because we just didn't see each other a whole lot. But when I made that call and got her on the phone, we had a really nice conversation. We spoke for almost a half an hour, just catching up with each other. And she shared that she and her husband were really excited. They would definitely come to the party. So the party goes off. The surprise was great. My mom and stepdad weren't suspecting at all. And we just had a really great afternoon with lots of friends and family there. Everything went well. So we chalked it up to a success, and that was that. About 2 weeks after the party, I got a really unexpected phone call from my mom. And she had said she and my stepdad were on their way to the hospital, that Terry was rushed to the hospital earlier that day in diabetic shock. And so her blood sugar levels were just through the roof, and doctors were doing everything they could to try to get her stabilized. Over the course of just a couple hours that evening, she had gone into a coma and eventually passed away. Wow. And it was just this like shocking situation. We had all seen her just 2 weeks before, happy, healthy. No one would have ever guessed that something like this would have happened. And so one of the first things, though, my stepdad had said to me was, thank you. that he didn't get a chance to say goodbye to Terry while she was conscious. And so his last memory of her and his last conversation with her was at that party. And so he thanked me for giving him that positive memory. And over the following few days, several other relatives and family friends had reached out to me and echoed similar sentiments, that some of them had not spoken or seen Terry in months or years prior to that party. And they were just grateful that they had the opportunity to remember her in that happy, positive way. And so for me, I just started to process the gravity of that situation after the fact. And it became clear to me that I think that was God working through me to get Terry to have that interaction with friends and family before her death. And so this was ultimately a tragic situation, but the silver lining in it for me was that we had that happy experience, a couple of weeks before.
You know, we were talking about, this reminds me a little bit, we were talking about awareness of God, and that, you know, sometimes we're very aware, sometimes we're not. I mean, it's interesting, in hindsight, you're saying, oh, God was present in that situation in a way that you might not have realized at the very moment, right? Even though nobody would have wanted that to happen. Sure. It's incredible when we look back, and memories can be so precious in that respect, that we can see what we couldn't see necessarily at the time. But I know also you've shared some other stories with me before, with just dark times, struggles, difficult times that you've gone through. Tell us a little bit about that, because I know that's been kind of influential in your in the development of your spirituality and your experience of God.
Absolutely. So there's been plenty of different dark times over the years for me. And for those that know me well, they know that last year in particular was a particularly challenging time, both for me and really my family. And we experienced a lot of highs and lows. I think a lot of those were just growing pains because we had made some changes as a family. So I've shared before with Cedar Ridge that my husband and I both started new jobs last year in pretty close proximity to each other. My son started a new preschool, and there were just new demands for our time, competing interests. And really, I think we were left with a lot less time for each other as a couple, my husband and I, and then as a family, and there were just some new challenges to parenting. So that was sort of the catalyst for the year. And then, you know, there were different things happening. So a few friendships that were stable and reliable in the past started to feel more difficult to maintain or requiring a lot more energy on my part. And I didn't feel like I was getting a lot out of them. And there were some extended family circumstances and pressures going on too that just sort of compounded for me. So everything kind of came to a head late in the summer or early fall last year, where I just got to a point that personally I was questioning my identity. I was questioning my value and what I could contribute to others, and really, you know, my purpose or where I was headed. So it was a time that I just felt really sad, really anxious about the future. And then as a coping mechanism, rather than addressing my problems head on, I started to just daydream about a different life entirely. So I spent, I don't know how much time in the evening sort of combing through real estate and in different states, thinking about just picking up and moving, kind of having that clean slate.
Running away, right?
So escapism, right?
Always a great taxi.
Exactly. And I know you and I had a conversation around that time to just process some of the emotions I was feeling. And in talking to you and then talking to some others around that time, just being very vulnerable about where I was at and where I was feeling, I at least learned I wasn't alone, that other people were echoing, you know, that they had felt that way at different points in their lives too.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I got to a point, at least mentally, where, you know, I was more accepting that, you know, there are a lot of things in life that I can't control. But things like my attitude or my expectations, or realizing, you know, I can't change other people's responses, that I needed to, you know, change the things that I could within my control and try to make a positive difference. And it was around that time that there was a sequence of a few events that really just helped to build momentum for me. So it started with something really small. I met a new family at the bus stop, and we started chatting in the mornings before the bus came and kind of hit it off. And so Chris and I invited them over for dinner one evening. We had a really nice night, and the friendship has kind of developed since that point. So that was just a nice reminder that friendships don't always have to be difficult, and sometimes things can blossom unexpectedly and you know, benefit both parties. From on a professional level, I got approached about two separate different leadership opportunities that were completely unrelated to each other. And I had had some old friends reach out to me and reconnect. And then you and I had talked again, and you had mentioned the possibility of joining the board at Cedar Ridge, which felt completely out of the blue, you know, at that point. But those things happening all in pretty close proximity to one another just gave me such a confidence boost at a time that I really needed it. And it was just, to me, messaging that, hey, there were people who believed in my worth and value and understood me, and I felt seen.
Yeah.
And so in that way, it was almost an answer to my prayers at that point for what I was seeking.
Yeah, that's so cool. I mean, we all need that. And I'm sure everyone can relate to those kind of issues and moments in our life where we feel like that. What's help you, you know, you did some things there. Obviously, some things happened to you. I mean, we're talking about in this psalm, being intentional and also being receptive, being aware, you know, when things come our way. What are some other intentional things you've done in dealing in difficult times? And I'm interested also in how you're doing at the moment, because obviously, you know, we've been in a pandemic for the last few months, and that's not been an easy time, right? So tell us a little bit about what are some of those coping mechanisms you have, or how are you being proactive?
Yeah, well, and I'll admit too that I think for me it's easier to find God in happy times and be appreciative and grateful when things are going well or you get that answer to your prayers. Yeah. And I struggle sometimes in difficult situations to seek God, or when I feel like I have to give all my time and energy to fixing a problem or strategizing, and then don't take time out to be open to receiving God.
Yeah.
When I do take action, I think the things that are really helpful are some of the practices we encourage at Cedar Ridge. So the welcoming prayer, for example, has been huge. So, you know, during stressful times or difficult times, or sort of just in general, I feel like day-to-day life can be so busy, and it's so easy to gloss over things and just move from one activity to the next. So the welcoming prayer has been a really nice reminder, or when I'm feeling negative emotions, to just kind of stop and sit with it. And, you know, take some time out to just let the feelings happen, you know, not worry about why I'm feeling them or getting rid of them, and just sort of invite God in. And those have been, you know, doing that practice has been really helpful in just sort of centering myself and resetting my mind and helping me better deal with emotions that I'm sort of more acutely experiencing. Yeah. And sort of in that same contemplative vein, I've taken advantage of several quiet days at Cedar Ridge, and kind of the same idea for me. It's a good reminder to slow down, to invite God in, to just, you know, focus on what's around me and be more open to hearing messages that God may want to share with me in that moment.
Yeah.
So those have been really important practices for me, particularly in dark times. And I do feel sometimes that, you know, I get these messages. And so, and that last time I was talking about last year, there was a point when I was driving in my car and this song came over the radio, and it was the song we had played earlier in the service. So it's Lauren Daigle is the artist, and the song is called You Say.
Isn't that a coincidence that we played it earlier?
Yeah, interesting. It's like you knew. but the song came across the radio. I had never heard it before. I had never heard of Lauren Daigle. And it was just a situation where the lyrics really spoke to me, the lyrics and the music. And as we heard, you know, the lyrics address feelings of self-doubt, of not measuring up, but then give this really important reminder that that's not how God views us, and, you know, and what our potential might be, and the fact that we're loved regardless. And so, you know, having those types of experiences makes me feel like, again, a reminder, God is here. And sometimes you get those messages just when you need to hear them.
Yeah, that's cool. Again, I think it's a sort of combination, isn't it, of being intentional. There's things we can do. And then there's things that come our way, which we can miss. But if we're more aware of them and more tuned into them, we can accept them more, and they can have an impact. Let's shift gears a little bit here, because I know, tell us a little bit more about your journey. In particular, I'm interested in how being part of Cedar Ridge is helpful or not to your spiritual journey. But obviously things have changed over time. You related back to childhood. Tell us just briefly, what were some of the key factors in some of the changes in the way that you see God and experience God?
Yeah. So I think my evolution and my spiritual journey really got off to a kickstart when I left home for college. So where I grew up, it was a small, not very diverse town in Western PA. So it was primarily Christian, Caucasian. And I left to go to school in Philadelphia. So you can imagine the culture shock of going from small town to big city. And then just, I was exposed to a lot of different people from a variety of different backgrounds. And so through taking different classes, attending events on campus, just meeting different people, it sort of forced me to consider certain issues or challenge certain opinions I had, because these were things that I just wasn't exposed to previously or wasn't really forced to think about previously. And so one class always stands out in my mind is being influential. It was something called the Culture of Respect class. And the class was designed that each week we would handle a different form of oppression. So whether it be racism, ageism, sexism, one each week. And we would break out into groups that were peer-led, and there would be discussion questions and prompts, but then we would just talk with each other and share our experiences, our opinions, practice active listening. And I feel like I just learned so much from my peers in that class. And so that's just sort of one example of an eye-opening experience for me.
Yeah.
And I think it's so easy to form opinions or overlook truths if those issues don't affect you directly, or if you don't have to sort of stare them in the face. So that kind of took me on a different trajectory where, I was leaving this comfort zone and how I viewed God, and realizing that life was more complex. I had a lot of different unanswered questions when it came to religion and discriminatory practices in religion. And so while I spent some time early on in college trying to find a church that I felt comfortable, it just wasn't working out. And I think I felt frustrated and confused. And honestly, I just sort of gave up on religion for a while. I felt that I didn't necessarily need to go to a particular place at a particular time with other people, that I could just be a good person and that would be enough. And that was fine and well for a while. But what sort of changed things again for me is when I became pregnant with my daughter, Dahlia. And that experience was transformative on a number of levels. But one of those levels was that I felt I was missing this deeper connection to God. And the fact that I was going to be bringing a child into the world made it feel for me that the stakes were higher, that this was going to be another human that I'm going to directly influence and affect. And so I got to the point where I wanted to seek God again, but really on my own terms, in a way that felt meaningful and valuable to me, and in a place that would help me be able to grow and evolve and ask those questions. Mm-hmm. So I shared before, around that time I was exploring churches in the area and found Cedar Ridge. And I felt almost immediately connected to Cedar Ridge when I started attending, that this would be the place for me, that I could grow and evolve. And it certainly has been so far.
That's cool. We're nearly out of time here, Jen, but a question I've got for you. So you mentioned there about sort of your eyes being opened when you left home and sort of diversity issues and being more open-minded. We're obviously in the middle in our culture right now of a heightened awareness about racial injustice. And that's a key focus for us as a church. It's something has been for some time. Tell us how has that impacted you as being part of this community, and how's everything sitting with you at the moment? Obviously, that's a big question, right? But
Yeah, well, it's been a heavy time. It's been a heavy emotional time, and I've been reflecting a lot about racial injustice. And then everything is compounded because, as you mentioned before, we've got this pandemic going on.
Yeah.
I think the practices I had mentioned earlier, like the welcome prayer and the quiet day, those contemplative practices still are helpful to me now and in processing some of the current issues. But I think taking action has felt much more important. And so in the past at Cedar Ridge, you know, I've taken part in several different initiatives or events. And so I took a trip to Guatemala 2 years ago, which was a wonderful experience. And, you know, that was just a way for me to feel on the front lines, interact with the community, just realize too the privilege and wealth that I have and how it can compare to other areas of the world. And yet to see and the people of Apollo's sense of community and love and kindness. I mean, it was a wonderful experience. Yeah. I've been working with some other members at Cedar Ridge on continuing our food and backpacks program for Green Castle Elementary. And we know that educational equity often tends to be a race issue too, that unfortunately people of color seem to be in the educational systems or schools that have the least funding or have the least resources. And so a group of us from Cedar Ridge in early March, right before things went crazy with the pandemic, we had traveled to Annapolis to advocate for the Kirwan Commission's Maryland Blueprint, which is this 10-year plan of funding, increasing funding and increasing support services, really just to better our educational system statewide and make it more equitable. So all of those types of experience have helped me feel like, you know, I'm doing something or trying to contribute to the greater good.
Now, I know also, Jen, you correct me if I'm wrong, you've signed up for the racial justice team's encounter group, which is tomorrow night. I mentioned that earlier, right, in the service, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Yes. Tell us why are you going to be part of that group? What's driving that for you?
Yeah, you know, obviously I'm a white woman, and so I've been a beneficiary of white privilege, probably in many ways that I know, but in many ways that I don't know over the years. And I think it's helpful for me, and it's most relatable when I can hear other people's experiences and stories. And so I think any opportunity like that, where I can hear the other side or listen and learn from other people, just can give me a better sense of what I may have done and shouldn't have, or what I can do in the future to promote equity. Yeah. Similarly, at my workplace, and in the past few weeks, they've been holding healing circles where it's open to everyone, but a similar opportunity to share experiences and listen and learn from each other. And that's been really beneficial. So I just want to continue to do that as much as I can. And Cedar Ridge has been a great catalyst for me and giving me concrete ways that I can be active and contribute to the causes I feel strongly about.
That's great. Well, we were talking earlier about, you know, it's one thing to be remorseful and aware and repentant. It's another thing to renew a commitment or even renew a vow to be different. So I'm going to be part of that group tomorrow as well, because I want to be different. You know, just want to encourage everybody to sign up for that and get involved. But Jen, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate you sharing so vulnerably. And I know you're going to be leading communion in a little bit, so you need to get ready for that as well. So we'll see you a bit later. Thanks so much, Jen.
Okay. Yep. Bye-bye.
But let's wrap up now by looking back at the three lenses through which we looked at this psalm, Psalm 65. And we're asking ourselves, really, how can this psalm help us grow in our experience of God? There's some discussion materials for this week. You can download those online. And they have some questions that will help us explore this a little bit. Great for groups or in couples or in, you could look at them individually, you know, and just reflect on them. And there's some spiritual exercises as well, some prayer practices. So do check those out. The first lens was, of course, experiencing God through intentionality. I think this speaks for itself, and the psalm challenges us about being real, being honest, being proactive, about putting ourselves into the presence of God and offering ourselves, if you like, in a humble, open kind of way. So I just want to let that sit with you. You may feel challenged because perhaps you've done that in the past and it's slipped and you need to recapture that. Maybe it's a fresh challenge, a new challenge, and I would encourage you, take up that challenge. There's a prayer practice in the material this week which might help with that. Secondly, we've been talking about experiencing God through greater awareness, being more aware of God in God's presence in everyday life, and especially the loving action of God in the world, the manifest presence of God through justice and righteousness. I think if we're honest, we all experience that to some degree in any given day, and we all kind of miss the mark as well in any given day. There are times where we feel the presence of God. We might feel very close to it, that we have a sense of cooperating with love and justice and God's action in the world. And then there's other times where we're either oblivious to it, maybe we participate in negative action or negative talk, and we're not aware of it, and that's where we need to become more aware, or we just are aware of it and we withdraw, and we need to sort of be conscious about the fact that, yeah, we withdrew, we deliberately did not cooperate with love and justice in the world. And there's a practice that can help us with that. It's an ancient Ignatian one called the Examine, and it's the one in the material this week. And what the Examine does basically is help us reflect back on the day. And we look back on the fact that, yeah, there was a mixture of things that went on. And we home in, first of all, on the positives, on the times where we remember, yeah, that was a really positive experience. I felt God's presence there. And I think it's so easy for us to forget. I know when I go on vacation, or we have family get-togethers or things like that, sometimes they're a mixture, right? There's rough and tumble, and there can be some tensions and things like that. But then when you get on the other side of it, you look back and think, oh, that was such an amazing time. It's almost like the negatives just dissipate, and you just think about the beauty of the time, and it becomes a fond memory. And I think that's what the Examine does. It kind of seals and sears things into our memories, where we say, that was really positive. And it becomes part of who we are. It becomes a powerful memory, and that can empower us to experience more of God, because we might be more tuned into it the next time. But it also helps us honestly look at times in our day where perhaps we were we missed something. It might help us to be more conscious. We think, oh, actually, I think I missed out there. Yeah, I lost my temper with so-and-so, or I made a defensive remark, or whatever it is. Or maybe we were conscious of it at the time, and we just need to own that and be honest about it. And that's not to beat ourselves up. It's just to help us grow. And the idea being that the next day we'll be able to go into that day with that memory, with that the power of that, and behave and be differently. And it's a practice that can help us grow. So I encourage you to look at the Examine practice in the material, and try to do that every evening if you can. You only have to do it for a few minutes. It's only looking back over 24 hours. But I think you'll find it really helpful in helping us see our lives, our everyday lives, a little more differently. And then thirdly, gratefulness, experiencing God through the practice of gratefulness. We've talked a lot about gratefulness in the past, obviously. I think the key here, though, is allowing gratefulness to help us understand and appreciate our interconnectedness. And that can drive us, as we were saying, to justice. I think this is what Jesus was getting at in the Sermon on the Mount, something we looked at not so long ago. But when Jesus taught us to pray in what has now become the Lord's Prayer, and in Matthew 6:11, it says, give us this day our daily bread. It's give us this day our daily bread. In other words, it's not about me. Gratefulness and provision, and gratefulness for provision, is a collective thing. It's an understanding of our interdependence. I think that's also what Jesus was getting at in the Sermon on the Mount, where he talked about loving your enemies. Jesus says in Matthew 5, for instance, in verse 43 to 45, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. I think what Jesus is getting at here, perhaps, if we read between the lines, is, you know, they may be your enemies, but who's righteous and who's unrighteous? There are other people looking at you the same way. And we are all interconnected. The sun shines on all of us. The rain shines on all, or rain rains on all of us. We're all belong to God. We all belong to one another. So this sense of gratefulness, I think, is far from selfish. It actually begins to break down barriers that help us to see other people in a different way and help us to work for and strive for justice for everyone, no matter how comfortable we may feel ourselves. Gratefulness does not let us just sit in that same place, but moves us forward into a deeper experience of God. And that's a beautiful thing. We're going to have communion now. Jen and her family are going to lead us in that. And I think this sense of interconnectedness is so much part of the communion that we practice every week. It's an understanding of Christ's presence with us, that we belong. We are one with Christ, one with God, and that we are one with one another. We're going to take communion together. We eat and drink together. Even though we're in our different homes at the moment, we are one in spirit. And that's because we all belong to one another. We all belong to God. We're sustained in this beautiful way. And that is our experience of God. So let's take communion together now.